We're on Daf Tet Zayin Amud Bet, the start of Mishnah Vav. You want to see it? Tet Zayin Amud Bet, the start of Mishnah Vav. Towards the bottom of the page, about 10 lines from the bottom. Everyone with me? I'm moving. Lo Yarbelo Noshim El Shmona Esrei. The beginning of this Mishnah quotes the pasuk in the Torah that the king may not amass too many wives. He cannot have a harem that's too large. Right? And then the Mishnah comes to tell us what is considered too large. Okay? And it's 18. The Gemara will tell us how the Mishnah came to that number. Okay? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mar Behulo, Ulevat Shelo Yuh Misirot Et Libo. Rabbi Yehuda is disagreeing with the Tanakhama. Yehuda says that the limit about how many wives you should have is the amount that will cause him to turn astray. Well, if it's 10, it's 10. If it's 20, it's 20. If it's 5, it's 5. It depends on...
That's a mistake that Shlomo made.
Okay, it's precisely so. He darshaned not so much this Mishnah. The Mishnah didn't exist at the time of Shlomo. He darshaned the Pasuk. Pasuk says, do not amass too many wives, for they will turn your heart astray. So, there you have it. He said, I'm more in charge than that. I'll have the amount that I want, and I'll make sure they don't turn my heart astray. So then comes Rav Shimon Omer, Afilo achas v'hi mesira es libo hareza lo yisa'ena. It says even one, like think of Izebel, right? Jezebel, Vachav, right? So Rav Shimon basically agrees with Rabbi Yehuda in terms of how to read the Pasuk. Right? In other words, it's not a question of the amount, it's a question of the function of what that's doing to you. No one's going to say one wife is too much for a king.
What's the general halacha for a lay person back then when it comes to there's no limit?
Yeah.
As many as you can support.
This is something on the king, yeah. Okay. Im kain lama nomar v'lo yarbelo noshim. Rav Shimon, if you say that even one or two is too many, if they're turning his heart, why does the Torah even bother saying lo yarbelo noshim? Just let the Torah say, don't have your wife or wives turn your heart astray. Forget about the amount. So the Gemara says, da afilu ka Abigail. This is our Mishnah's way of saying that it feels that Abigail is the best wife of Tanakh. Because Abigail kept Mabuvit from the 9 o'clock, the 8 o'clock shear. Remember earlier in the year, Abigail kept David from sinning. That allowed him to become king. V'lo yarbelo susim ela kadem markavto. The Mishnah continues. Again, quoting the Pasuk, he may not amass too great a stable, but elakadei merkavto, enough for his merkavah. Now that's also, how much is that? Right? Shlomo had 40,000 stables of horses in the country. Is that kadei merkavto? What kind of merkavah does he need? Right? The kesef is ahav lo yarbelo. Here again, it says don't have too much money. Now, when it comes to the wives, it says because they will turn your heart astray. When it comes to the horses, what is that? There I can figure two reasons. A king should not amass too many horses because the horses might also turn his heart astray. Give me a pasuk we say in our daily davening that expresses the point. Can you think of a pasuk we say in our daily davening that brings home this point? Right before Elena. Eile varechev ve'eile basusim. Sheker asus l'shua. Right? Don't rely on the horse for your tshua. Turn to Hashem. So if a king amasses too many horses, he may become kochi votzim yodi. He may attribute his successes to his own wealth, his own might. So, all right, so I have the reasons. What's the reason about the money? So there we have to open up the pasuk and see. When it comes to the money, the next pasuk says, let him not lift his heart against his brethren. If a king becomes too wealthy, he will become haughty. He'll put his reliance on his wealth. Right? So the kesef is all below ela kadeshi tain afsanya. Maza afsanya. So Rashi says afsanya is an army. But to pay those soldiers. Not gonna just fight for nothing.
I don't see that they mention it, but I thought another reason about the horses was that horses come from Egypt.
Egypt, of course, that's the pasuk mentions. Okay? So the second reason not a philosophical reason, but the pasuk says itself. Because horses are raised in Egypt, and Egypt is a place I told you not to return to. Okay? So the assumption is that you know that the horse is obviously a thing a king wants to needs for his army, right? His merkava, to ride him around, right? And horses were developed in Egypt at this time, so that's especially why the Torah prohibits this. Where did the Torah say we shouldn't go back to Egypt? It's not quite clear. In Shmot, in Parshat Beshalach, it doesn't seem to be a mitzvah, it's a promise. The way you see Egyptians now, you won't see them again. It doesn't sound like a mitzvah. And at the end of Dvarim, in the Tochacha, it's like a threat. But if you sin, I'll take you back to Egypt as slaves again. So, be it as it may, Ibn Ezra suggests that the prohibition about returning to Egypt is here, this pasuk. Okay? Many Jews lived in Egypt. So they returned, maybe they returned for business, or they returned for a short stay, and they ended up staying. So it's sort of a lav shein b'masa, the Yerushalmi says. But be it as it may...
It's not the same Egypt, right?
So the Radbaz writes a tshuva and says that the Egypt we're not allowed to return to is a very thin strip of land around the Nile. Mm-hmm. You know, the Egypt of the ancient time is not this, you know, if you look at a map today, you see a big country, Egypt. Egypt at that time was very...
When he said that, I thought when he was... what he meant is like Egypt maybe is like a concept, like a Malik.
So that's a machlokes, the Rosh and the Rambam, about, not so much about the Rab Mitzrayim, but marriage to an Egyptian. The Torah has something to say about marriage to Egyptians also, remember? Third generation. There's one opinion that says it's a genealogical issue, which then therefore no longer exists because we don't know who's Egyptian, who's Edomite, who's Moabite, who's Zvulun. We do know Jews, right, because Jews did return after the 70-year Galus. We don't know anything else. So remember the Ammonite who says, I'm an Ammonite, so convert me, and he goes, well, you're not an Ammonite. You think you're an Ammonite, but you're not. Come, join the Kehillah. But others say no. It's any woman who lives in the geographical place that is ancient Egypt may not join the Kehillah. That's an Egyptian woman. Interesting.
Even if Jewish.
No, not if she can trace her lineage. That's a Jewish family that just moved there. That would be like Uriah Hachiti. No one, the doc just mentions the idea about David justifying what he did with him, because after all, Bathsheba wasn't halachically married. She was married to a Hittite. No, Uriah is a very Semitic sounding name. Uriah was a Jewish man who happened to have been born in the land of the Hittites, so it was called Uriah Hachiti. Lots of people like that in the Tanakh. Itai Hagiti, all kinds of people in Sefer Shmuel with names like that. Ovid Edom Hagiti, he was a Levi. Okay, weiter. All right, V'kosev lo sefer Torah lishmo, and he also writes a sefer Torah lishmo. Now every Jew has to write a sefer Torah, but the king has two. One he takes with him all the time, and one that he has in his property, that he owns like everyone else. Yotzei lamilchama v'hu imo. That's the word "who" goes on the word sefer. I said it because the Torah is a little ambiguous about it. It says, V'hoysa imo v'karo bo. Hoysa is feminine. V'karo bo, which is v'karo bo. So v'hoysa goes on the Torah. V'karo bo, he reads bo and sefer. So here it says, V'yotze l'melchama v'hu imo nichnas. Turn to Yitzayin HaMenalav. V'hu imo yoshev b'din v'hu etzlo. I just quoted that. Obviously, he doesn't take it into the base of Merchatz or anything like that. But the king walks around. Now, the Das came to Mibavli at Tosfos, and the Tosfos and Mibavli and Sanhedrin say that the king does not walk around with a full Sefer Torah. He has an amulet that has parts of the Torah written in it. It's quite big chiddush. Aseres Adivros, the parsha of appointing the king itself, that says, take it with you and read with it, and some other parts of Devarim. Interesting thing.
Where did they get this from?
They get that from this. I think from based on some descriptions of the Torah saying, read the Torah publicly, and then the Gemara in Sota says, we only read parts of Sefer Devarim. So it might just be a practical question. I've seen tiny Torahs, like really small Torahs. But for him, he came to walk around with it.
Or maybe they learned from a kid, and they say, whatever you're reading a kid, that's
a But one thing's for sure, the picture that this Mishnah gives of the King of Israel is very much like, if you've ever read the Plato's Republic, of the picture Socrates gives of the philosopher king that we want to have basically serve us, is really what this king is about. Basically, the Torah is telling all the things that he's not to do, and he's busy with the acquisition of knowledge all the time, right? So where did Shmuel Hanavi get this big chiddush? We're just finishing the Mishnah that starts Lo Yarbelo Nashim. So where did the Shmuel get the chutzpah to say Zeiya Mishpat HaMelech? This is the judgment of the king, and he's going to take your daughters and your sons and bakers and cooks, and he's going to make an army, and he's going to take your fields and your vineyards. Did he get that from this?
It's predictive. It's on.
Right. So that's first of all, it's machlokis. Rav and Shmuel call Amor v'Parshas Melech Mutarbo or not, whether he was just trying to scare them, right? And second of all, he was not telling him what he can do, but what he will do.
Well, even our big kings took enormous.
And also, none of the things written here say anything that contradicts what Shmuel said. Right? I mean, he would definitely take some of the daughters up to 18, depends, according to opinion, he could take as many as he
can. Right, nothing is contradicting this, it's just that the flavor, the essence of what the king is really, Torah is creating a very different picture than what Shmuel is saying. Shmuel is just expressing to us a well-known idea, is that absolute power tends to corrupt. Absolutely.
Maybe we have one king like this, like the ideal king, maybe.
It started off as Shaul, but...
Yoshiahu,
maybe. Yirmiyahu speaks of him in that way. Maybe Yotam. Yeah, very few. Okay, so Ein Rochvin al Suso, Ein Yoshvin al Kiso, Ein Mishtamshin b'Sharvito. Don't ride on his horse. That's where Achashverosh was able to tell Haman's real intention. Because when Haman said, "Let him wear the king's crown," Achashverosh knew that Haman thought that Haman thinks it's him that I want to give the cover to. Right? The text reveals to us that that's what Haman was thinking, but. But the good commentaries say that Ahasuerus knew that. He's testing Haman, right? And that's what made him look at his Divrei Hayomim to begin with, because he thought that maybe Esther and Haman were plotting his life, and that if anyone would know about it, would they reveal it to me? So let me see if someone didn't reveal a plot to me once in the past. Be it as it may, he says, don't ride his horse, don't sit in his seat, don't use his sharvit. Ve'ein ro'in oso arom ve'lo kishu mistaper ve'lo beveis hamerchatz. Shne'amar, som tosim alecha melech she'tehei ein maso olecha. Where do we see that in this pasuk? So it's from the word olecha. It should have said, som tosim lecha, shlach lecha, veich lecha. Som tosim lecha melech. What's this som tosim alecha melech? He's sitting on you. Right. What's interesting is that the Yakar on the Chumash says that when Shmuel got angry with this question, the Atah. He says, we can find in this all kinds of things that got Shmuel angry. One is, this is the Rambam, says that they said we have to have it now. And so he said, well, we just have a meeting, let's talk, let's discuss it. You have I've been serving you as your general, I'm going to fight your battles against the Plishtim. I'm your prophet, I'm your spiritual leader, I've been a political leader, I've been doing all kinds of things for you, and then you have to have it right away. So he says this also. So they should have said Sima Oleinu. Get it? They just said, see, they didn't want someone to be Shetasim. The Shofteinu. Right? The king is not a shoftim. Shoftim and shoftim is one thing. Don't mix the judiciary with the executive. Right? Especially since Rabban points this out. Especially since Shmuel was their shofet. You know, basically the thing the shofet gave us a king to be a shofet. Right? And of course, the most famous one is that they wanted to be killed. But the next pasuk says, "Vayera be'enei Shmuel kasher sha'al ha'am tznonu melech l'shofteinu." What really irked them the most was that they mixed up these institutions of the melech and the shofet. Okay. So the Gemara, ready to go? Yes. Incidentally, the Rambam paskins that if a king amasses great wealth. All right, he made good investments. You know, he was thrifty. Rama says he can't keep it. He has to use it for communal purposes. He has to build roads. He has to, make waterworks. He has to do things. We can't amass the wealth. That would be a violation of this. Okay, but loyer belo noshim. Gemara says, Rav Kahana Amar al shem hashishi yitra am leegla umaksiv taman v'maat v'osifaloch kohena v'chohena. Yerushalmi is much more concise than Bavli on this. Bavli is very clear, but I just have to explain what this means. In Shmuel Bet Perek Gimel, six children of David are mentioned. And the last one is named Yitra'am. There's six of them all together.
Children or wives?
Six children. Six wives and each one with a child. Yes, yeah. Right? Okay. So there are six children. And when David sinned with Bathsheba, the prophet told him, why did you have to take a woman that wasn't yours? Im ma'at, if you felt you didn't have enough wives, the osifaloch, I would allow you to enhance upon what you already have. You can add to that. Kohena, which is another six. The Kohena, and another six. That's where we get the number 18. Okay? It's fascinating that the Gemara just drops the ball with that. That's it. Because the sugya in the Bavli is a whole page. The Bavli asks kashas on this. Because the six women are the sons of Adonia ben Chagit, the oldest is Amnon, then Kilav, then Avshalom, then Adonia ben Chagit, then Shfatya, and then this Yitra'am. So the six mothers are the mothers of these six children. But there was one wife that's not mentioned in these six. Should have been 21. David had another wife before these six.
When did I have a baby, right? When did David's kids die as a baby?
Yes, that was Bathsheba, but Bathsheba wasn't his wife yet, so that's not in the Cheshbon.
Michal.
What about Michal? That was his first wife. She's not in this Cheshbon because she didn't have a child. So the Bavli goes through an Amichus on this. Not a Tosfos, it's the Gemara that asks his Kasha. And the Gemara responds that Egla. You see, it's Yitram Le'egla. Did I mention your name here? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Yitram Le'egla. Gemara says that Egla was Michal. Because by the six women, it says Amnon's mother was this name, right? And when it says Egla Eshes David had Yitram. So the Bible says, oh, that Egla was Michal. Why was she called Egla? Why was she mentioned six that she was first? All right. But there's a bigger problem than that. The Gemara says in Haftorah Parshas, the Pasuk says in Haftorah Parshas Shmini that she didn't have a child. But it says she didn't have a child till the day she died. You get it? She had a child the day she died. My daughter just made a poster. She's into graphic art. She has to make these like creative posters. So she writes a poster that says, to-do list. And the things I have to do today. Right? And she writes, grocery, shopping, finish homework. And at the bottom, there's a box that says, hurt you. Can you figure it out? You have anyone say to you, the last thing I want to do is hurt you. But it's on my list. So in the Torah, when he said, you see how this is the same? It says, and Michal did not have a child till the day she died.
also mean
what it
that?
Means is that he never went near her, and she never had a child. Even the day she died, she didn't have a child. But this Gemara, by saying that Yitra'am is actually Michal, in order to resolve the 6 plus 6 plus 6 equals 18, because according to that Cheshbon, it should have been 7 plus 7 plus 7, right? So it says, okay, Egla is Michal, but how about Egla has a child here? Michal says she didn't have a child. Right, she had a child the day she died.
Couldn't she have had a child first, and then the story happened subsequent to that she was barren?
Yes, yes. In fact, I saw some Mishonim who actually asked that question. But they proved from some Mishmaus back earlier that she didn't have children yet at the time. But, something like that, about the way that they were only together in the room, and then, yeah.
Did it bring a question about what happens to people who says Ad Velod Michal?
Yeah, until the day she died, but not including the day she died. It's the mashmaut. Yeah, Gemara feels he can get away with saying that. You know? Okay, anyway, but that's the whole cheshbon, and the Bavli make goes to a longer arichos. The Yerushalmi just ends it here. Let's go on. Lo yabelo susim el kadem arkavto. You got it? Al shem v'yakar David is kol harechev. How do we know that? Because now it brings a raya from David, but actually this was done before David. Right, when David fought battles against enemies where he conquered many horses, where he captured many horses, he it says Vayakor, but you have to be careful. The Gemara says don't, but not with Baltashkas. Vayakor can mean that he cut them at the knee. That would kill a horse. Most would die.
Lamed them.
Yes, so he lamed them means that he cut a piece of their hoof that they can't gallop anymore. But no one would use them as a in front of a chariot. The horse might like that more. In other words, he rendered the horse incapable of being a tool of battle anymore. Like remember Adoni Bezek in the beginning of Shoftim, he cut off the thumbs and the toes. He basically rendered them incapable of holding a sword and running. So all right. It might even be a little enlightened, you know, and someone else will just kill their captured captives. So I'll just render them incapable of serving as soldiers. Okay? All right, okay, where are we? But I said that someone did this before was Yahushua. It's if Yahushua, when he captures horses, he also carves them. And it's so the Mephoshim explained that they cuts off a piece of the hoof. Okay, biter. The Kesev Zav Lo Yabelo, Elokadei Litain Afsanya. Afsanya, the Korbanaitis said, was to pay his soldiers. He has to have a standing army. He has to have ready defenses. And that's his obligation. So, what does it say here? Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Omar, Ubilvad Afsanya Shoshana Zubilvad. Because, the fact is that if you say a king has to have enough for his army, he'll say, I'd rather have. David had a standing army of 1,100,000 soldiers. Probably more than that, because there's one battle where he fights with that many people in Sefer Shmuel. One, it's the largest number in the Tanakh. Right? So you could say, listen, I have to gather money to pay a million soldiers for the next 20 years. So he's going to end up himself. So what's considered afsanya that year? Keep at any one time enough to support soldiers for that year. Amar Ravacha, Amar Shlomo, Shlosh Dvarim Shesochka Aleihem Midas Adin Chilaltim. Lo yabelo noshim, uksiva hamelech Shlomo ohav noshim nachrios. Rav Shimon ben Yochai amar ohav mamash lesnus. Alright, let's just see what the different opinions are. But basically, Gemara is saying here what you know from the Bavli, is that there are three things the Torah gave reasons not to amass too much wealth, because he'll become haughty, not to amass too many horses, you go back to Egypt, not to have too many wives, you'll turn your heart astray. And he says, I'll do all three, and I won't fall into the trap of the other things that we're trying to protect. So here we have different opinions. One that says that Melch Shlomo, he loved women. So Rashbi says he loved them for Znus. Okay. For Avat Hamin, Hanani ben Achir Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Al Shem Lo Titchatein Bam. No. Why did he love all these women? And he probably did a very good job of this. He allied himself with every king of the world. What do you think these women were? They were daughters of kings. Right? Just marrying any. The first opinion says he just married for Znus. Znus is Znus. He doesn't even care who the father-in-law is. Right? But if he did it for Chitun, in order to get close to bring peace with other nations, so that's this opinion. Rabbi Yossi Omer, L'moshcha nedivrei Torah l'korban tachas kanfei
Hashchina. He probably likes that, the last one the best.
Shlomo loves that. And you know, the Rambam actually writes this down in the Chazishus. He says that Shimshon also did the same thing. It's a little stretch, but okay. What's interesting is that Moshkon the Divrei Torah of Korban Tachas Kanfei Hashchina. It's really quite amazing. But, so the Rambam says that's what Shlomo is doing. Right, so I would say there's one there. You see, I can picture it for everyone, but his marriage to Paro's daughter is problematic. He marries Paro's daughter because an Egyptian has to go three generations of, Dor Shlishi can marry. And it's just inconceivable that Paro's daughter was a third generation convert to Judaism. Just inconceivable that Paro at the time of Shlomo was a convert to Judaism. And it's, forget about that would have made world headlines, but the Tanakh doesn't mention anything like that. Alright, so his marriage to Paro's daughter was sinful. You can't say that, because when he marries Paro's daughter, it says, and Shlomo loved God and did everything according to God's word, except the fact that he still allowed people to offer korbanos on Bamot. Because he should have built God's holy place already by then. It took too much time.
Doesn't it say that about another king also?
Yeah. It says that by a lot of kings. It should say from Malachim. Now,
why can't we learn that it's Mitzri v'lo Mitzri?
So, good, excellent. So, there's a Shita, Shimon Bar Yochai, which is amazing. Because here, what does Shimon Bar Yochai say here? He's the one who says, there's Nus. But it's Shimon Bar Yochai in the Mishnah in Sefer Yevamos who says that Mitzri v'lo Mitzri. So when he says that, the rabbis tell him, well, if you, this is the famous statement they make, im kabbalah nikabel. If you have a kabbalah that the women of Egypt are to be treated differently than the men of Egypt, like Ammon and Moab, we accept the halacha and we understand what you're doing with Shlomo. But if it's not based on the kabbalah but based on the kal v'chomer, what's the kal v'chomer?
Moab.
If the men of Moab and Ammon, who can never marry even after 10, 20 generations, but their women are invited right away, like Rus and Naamah Ammonis. Remember, Shlomo's wife, who was the mother of the next king, was an Ammonite, not Jewish born. If the women of Ammon and Moab, whose men may never join the Kehillah, may nonetheless join immediately, Kal v'chomer Egyptians, who have to wait three generations, their women, of course, should be invited to him. So they said, if you're giving in logic, in min hadin, that's the lashon they use, then we'll slug you up. We'll say, no, Ammon and Moab have to be treated for a particular reason, with which we actually coincidentally dealt with in the first year tonight with Rus. So we don't say that extends to Egypt. I don't have it that the women of Egypt didn't enslave us as much as the men, or they were kinder to us.
And it doesn't say Mitzri yet.
Right. Well, that's the same argument they made.
Nowadays, we normally say if a Jew marries someone who's not Jewish, it's sinful and about marriage, whatever it is. What do we take from this when they're doing this all the time now?
So I assume that a woman who marries the king of Israel becomes, becomes Jewish.
It's like they're converting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know, is Kate Middleton Jewish or not? I keep hearing yes, no. I heard that she's Jewish. She has a Jewish mother.
Yeah, I thought I heard that.
The next king of England is going to be a Jew.
Is that good for the Jews?
All right, so it's interesting that Shimon Bar Yochai in our Gemara is disparaging Shlomo, but in the Gemara in Yevamos, Shlomo loves him. It's an amazing Gemara that says that. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, I think he says that the Satan and Pnina with Hashem Shemayim Nisgavnu. Pnina with Chana, and this was a sot on Hashem Shemayim. That by, you know, when Hashem said, look how Eov, he's such a Yerei Shemayim, so the Sultan was Lashem Shemayim, he said that Eov lived at the time of Abraham, and he says, no, he's not as great as Abraham, right? So the Gemara says the Sultan came down to earth and kissed him, and he lived past 100. So because even the Sultan wants respect, right? As Mick Jagger will make you. I don't know if he wants sympathy. I don't know if he wants respect. Sympathy for the devil.
Talking.
anyway, so here Shimon Bar Yochai is sort of this is Shlomo a bit. All right, but I see Rabbi Yossi says that he wanted to bring them to Achaz Kan Teshchin, and then the post can bring that down. Rabbi Lezer Omer Al Shem Gamo So Hechtiu Hanoshim Hanachrios. But the fact is that he got burnt because the women turned him astray. Okay. Ashkav Timur of Shimon ben Yochai v'Chananya v'Elezer Chada Rav Yosi Polig al Tlaseihon. You see that there is one direction of, you know, that Shlomo was not L'Shem Shemayim thinking, and one that he was L'Shem Shemayim. And don't be surprised that the Rambam chooses for his Mishnah Torah. And by the way, he says the same thing about Shimshon. It's quite amazing.
Is that an exercise in Yidan Lekaf's food, or are they really
I think it's just that... I told you, what I mentioned before is that the Torah, the Tanakh just says initially that the only thing wrong was those pesky bumos, but it should have said that he married an Egyptian. But what's interesting is that, remember I told you who was the son, the mother of the next king, right? The son was Rechavam. Mm-hmm. And the mother was Na'amah HaAmonis, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, get this. Shlomo ruled 40 years. Rechavam was 41 when he became king. Paro's daughter was not Shlomo's first foreign woman that he married. He married her after becoming king. He was not yet king. I'm not saying how old he was. It was Chazal say 52 when he died. I don't know. He's older than that, I think. But David, while still king, married off Shlomo to an Ammonite woman. Perhaps to show no one should ever have questions about my Moabite ancestry. Mm-hmm. Moabites and Ammonites, as long as they're accepting the Gila, as long as they do whatever conversion requires. Okay, that's the fact. Okay. Lo yarbelo susim. You with me? Ksiv ayil shlomo arba'im elef urvot susim. Remember I told you that he had 40,000 stables. That's really what he needed? So lemer kavo. That was what he needed for his chariots. Shnemasar elef parashim. 12,000 chariots. Remember in the story of Sisera, they had 900 chariots, and they said, oh my goodness, it's crazy. Who could even possibly... 12,000 chariots.
Are we supposed to interpret these numbers literally, or do we think they're metaphorical? I mean, it seems like a lot of chariots.
Maybe 1,000 for each tribe. I don't know what to make of it, but it's a lot. And it's peacetime. He's allied with every king.
We've had a million soldiers. It's not such a big number.
That's a huge number of soldiers.
It's a number. That's a lot of number at that time. That's a big number at that time. But he says, Batlonim are you. Batlonim means it was peacetime. What do you need this? Vahedyot mutra bakulan. There you go, you asked that question before.
Saying maybe it's
an individual is allowed.
The deterrent factor of all those chariots is what kept the nation peaceful.
It's interesting because there's a day in the Bavli that says that Shlomo went back to being a Hedyot. You get the irony? Mm-hmm. You know, remember that Ani Koheles Hayisi Melech Yerushalayim, the demon
in the
place.
Go back to being a Hedyot.
Yeah, abdicated.
The Ashmed. I remember all those stories with the Shamir and then get Nosa in Perik and Izaki. Kesef Izav Loyer Belo Maod Uksiva Itena Melaches Hakesef Yerushalayim Kavonim. People threw out silver like it was stones. Below are you nignavos. No one would steal. Who'd steal silver? Silver is nothing. Amar Yosi Bachanina Avnei Eser Amos Ushmon Amos. Okay. Look at the size of these this is obviously not a probably exaggeration. When they used weight, to balance on the other side of the scale, it was made of gold. Matam ein kesef nechshav bimei Shlomo. No one thought anything of silver. Ksev lischok amarti meholol. I think nothing of mirth. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu l'Shlomo. Ma tarazu baroshcha, raid mikisei. What kind of crown did you put on your head on my throne? Get off of my throne. Right? So, the Yerushalmi was about to get into an arichus of an agada, so that I just don't, I'm not up to going in with you now. It's sort of the Ashmedai genre. But that he's getting off the throne. So I think I see a little bit of an irony here, that he's using a dispensation about amassing women, horses, and wealth, which are amazingly permitted to the non-king, right? But not permitted to the king, because the king is the one who can take the people back to Egypt, who can, you know, and who can be diverted by so many women, and I want to keep him humble. So you behave like a head yod? All right, you become a head yod. So it's a shorter sugya here about what happened to him as a head yod, but Ashmedai took on his identity. Ashmedai is able to take on any figure he wants, but he just has one weakness. Remember, his feet. You can tell who he is by his feet. So he keeps coming to bed with his socks on. Some of his wives want to know what he's wearing, what's going on with the socks. Because he's cloven-footed or something like that. Yeah, maybe you remember, I don't know if that exact element made it into the Jewish press. Remember, the Jewish press in the middle always used to have these Ashmedai stories. I don't think that part got in. But anyway, so that's where the Gemara goes now.
Never
heard
of Ashmedai.
You never heard of Ashmedai? No. He's the guy who has the stone that can cut, the diamond that can cut the stone, the shamir. He's the guardian of that diamond.
Like a mythical creature?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll stop here, and I'm going to retire. Good evening.